fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. Now today we're going to talk about a topic that utterly fascinates me. I think that of all the things we talk about, it is the most universal because we all have to face this. And we have a great guest to discuss the topic of life after death. Specifically, we have the author of a recent book, Understanding Life After Death, an exploration of what awaits you, me, and everyone we've ever known. It's volume one in the Afterlife Topics books series. And our guest today is the author of said book, Cyrus Kirkpatrick. He writes about numerous topics that range from the esoteric and the spiritual to concepts related to mobile lifestyles, freedom, and travel. He currently lives in LA. He graduated from the University of Arizona back in 2010, and he says he spends a considerable amount of time traveling to exotic places. Sounds like fun. You can find out more about him at cyruskirkpatrick.com. Cyrus, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be here.
You're a young man. What got you looking into this particular topic? You know, a lot of times you think people maybe look at it when you're like me, you're in middle age, or maybe a little bit older. You still start to ponder these big questions, but you've started early. What's gotten you into this?
You know, people push this topic way back and they decide that they'll tackle it like in the later part of their lives. But I've always found that to be maybe not the best strategy. I mean, I began thinking about it at an early age, maybe when I was probably just past adolescence. It could be related to growing up on a ranch and probably having more free time than I wanted, which meant more time to think about big topics. And it also related a little bit to personal things in my family and experiences that people who were close to me used to have, and trying to understand them from an early age, trying to wrap my, you know, my young mind around them, as well as a tendency to go on the internet and debate with people a lot. And I guess I began as a bit of a skeptic, and I would talk about different paranormal types of subjects with, you know, people in Usenet news groups and things like that. And it just slowly evolved into like a lifelong interest. And, you know, just a couple of years ago, I decided I need to make it into a book. And that's where we are now.
And I assume that you are a believer. What do you think some of the best evidence for a life after death is? By the way, I'm on your side. I think there is life after death. I don't know what it is. It's utterly fascinating to me, but I believe something happens. What have you found to be some of the best evidence for this continuation beyond this physical body?
Well, Jim, I know you have a lot of experience talking to people about paranormal topics, and so it's almost difficult to deny it at a certain point when you're exposed to so much information and so much evidence. Now, I'm sure listeners of your show can relate to that as well. No, there are, you know, a couple of major topics to consider. I'm sure you've heard about near-death experiences, and this might be the primary source of information, and it's definitely the most influential in today's culture. And, you know, in a nutshell, of course, you know, near-death experiences occur in about 13% of people who undergo cardiac arrest, and it is basically a glimpse into a different universe. And of course, this is very exciting, and there's a lot of elements of the NDE which are not easily dismissed. And, you know, for years, skeptics have attempted to create explanations for this. And a lot of those explanations don't quite hold up. As an example, almost everybody who has a near-death experience and encounters like another living creature during that experience, they tend to be deceased relatives. So if it was an hallucination, you'd be seeing all types of things. You'd be seeing living people. You'd be seeing, you know, maybe things in your imagination that are similar to like drug-induced hallucinatory trips. But an NDE, it's very consistent. You often meet with deceased relatives, and the experience tends to cross a lot of cultural boundaries as well. So that's one. And then as I talk about in the book, there are many other topics as well. I mean, it's kind of one of these things where you put all the topics together and you have some kind of a clear idea of what's going on. You also have physical mediumship. That's a big one. It's something I've had a lot of interest in recent years because it's, I think, kind of like a new frontier. There's also electronic communication. There's some really interesting developments in that area, as well as after-death communications, deathbed visions, if you will. Some new topics coming along like terminal lucidity, which is very interesting. You have that reincarnation research by Ian Stevenson. These are just to name a few. There's so much stuff out there.
Sure. Now, I want to talk about some of these points that you just mentioned. First of all, what is your concept of through your research of the afterlife? I mean, for example, I come from the Christian tradition, and I was always taught there was a heaven and there was a hell. And as much as I don't want to think there's a hell, although except maybe for people like Hitler and Jeffrey Dahmer and people like that. But I hate to think of that. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm going to hell. I think I'm a pretty good guy, but I'm not as good as I should be. So maybe I'm going to hell. I think a lot of people have that fear of death that's been instilled from them in an early age. On the other hand, I think about heaven and how cool would that be? Do you find support for the idea of a heaven and hell in your research?
You know, it's interesting because when you go back into like old biblical texts, I think that there are a lot of attempts to explain the way reality really works. But over many, many years, millennia, we misinterpret those ideas. As an example, I think that there is such a thing as hell and there is such a thing as heaven. These are very simplified ideas, perhaps just invented as a way to help the masses understand like cosmic concepts, if you will. Mm-hmm. So hell, in a sense, is something that you condemn yourself to, because there's such a thing as negative near-death experiences. There's such a thing as people who pass away and are earthbound. I mean, you're somebody who's probably talked about a lot of different concepts related to ghosts during your time on the air, and that's an example of that. Somebody who is in such a negative state of mind that they refuse to move on, and they are kind of magnetically pulled into a dark plane, as we call it. You know, kind of a negative environment. And this could be described as hell. And I certainly think that, you know, in ancient times, people had experiences in these negative realms, and then they would report that it is hell. But there's nothing eternal about it. Like all those concepts of eternity in one place, these were all invented by the church to be able to instill fear and control people, in my opinion. So nobody has to worry about like making some mistake in the biblical rule book and being condemned to hell for all eternity. But people do need to be concerned with their state of mind, you know, how healthy their thoughts are, because ultimately that's the most valuable thing of all. I mean, it's the state of consciousness. How healthy is your consciousness? That's what determines where you go.
Now, another thing that is fascinating to me, because I think they're cousins, I think there's some interesting corollaries, and you'd sent me some notes before we chatted here, and one thing you talk about is out-of-body experiences and an out-of-body practice. How does that relate to something like an NDE? Are they cousins in a sense, and can you talk about that relationship?
Yeah, they are cousins because they are two different related phenomena. So a near-death experience is a forced out-of-body experience. So you incur a physical trauma and your body automatically ejects your ethereal body out of it. And when that happens, you begin the dying process, which usually involves, as is known in popular culture, a tunnel appearing, a tunnel and a light, usually being met by a deceased relative or a friend or somebody who can help you with that transition process. And then after that, you are perhaps given a life review, which is a chance to look back at your entire life, almost like in a blink of an eye, but you can relive your emotions and the things you did to other people. So you have the kind of like moral responsibility. It's kind of like, finishing class and getting your grade, so to speak. So that's the near-death experience. An out-of-body experience is it's related because you are disconnecting from your body, but it has nothing to do with dying. So in a way, you're jumping the gun a little bit and, you know, poking around, you know, your local vicinity, getting a little preview of, you know, perhaps what's to come. But, you know, there is no guided process. You're basically on your own. Although, you know, you can have out-of-body experiences that perhaps involve a guide or something more profound like that. However, most of the time, at least when I go out of body, it's just in my bedroom. And it's basically just a chance to kind of experiment and explore what it's like to not be in your body anymore. And you're essentially in kind of what I call the near-Earth astral. This is the same place that ghosts and hauntings come from. It's a place, it's a lot like the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze. You know, you can walk around, you can interact, you know, with other ethereal pieces of matter, but you can't touch anything that's physical unless you really, really focus. Hence how poltergeists can sometimes, you know, throw things off the wall because they are able to train themselves to do that. So when you go OBE, you're in that environment, but it's also it's not very stable because you're constantly being pulled back into your body. And you have to focus and train yourself to be able to stay out of your body for any significant amount of time. And it definitely takes a while. It's taken me, you know, years to be able to just maintain a state out of my body for longer than a couple minutes.
Now, it's interesting. You also brought this up, and I think this is an interesting point, and I want to flesh this out because I've never heard this before. You feel that the New Age movement can sometimes maybe confuse us or muddy the waters. What did you mean by that? I mean, in what way do you think that it can kind of muddy the waters?
Well, I do feel like the New Age movement is a kind of loose conglomeration of different authors and ideas, and so it's not necessarily like, you know, one ideology. However, there isn't much critical thought in the New Age movement. So basically, anybody can come and, you know, say that, hey, I'm a channeler and I'm getting all this information from the other side and this is the way it is and you can listen to me because I'm channeling the information. And nobody really questions whether or not it's accurate. What tends to happen is that sometimes there's books in the New Age category, which are very accurate, but there's also sometimes ideas and theories which are not very well tested and which can confuse people especially. And I've noticed this especially, you know, since I released my book, I get a lot of emails from people saying, hey, I bought this book, you know, maybe a popular book in the New Age aisle, and they said that when you die, you become a little floating orb of light and then you have to reincarnate back on Earth. And this sounds awful. I don't want that to happen to me. You know, is this what's going to happen to me? Because I don't want to go back. And then I usually write back and I say, look, you know, the subject is way too broad to be able to encapsulate any one thing like that. And oftentimes these New Age authors, they try to say, okay, we have all the answers. This is exactly what happens to you when you die. And this is what, you know, that this is how it's going to happen according to me. And that's not really the best way to approach the subject because the afterlife is way too broad. There's way too many things that can happen to be able to say X, Y, Z is how it is. Because when you say that, it's kind of like you get dogma. And dogma never really helps anybody. So that's usually, that's kind of how the New Age movement can go wrong a little bit, in my opinion.
Now, another piece of this that I think is absolutely fascinating, we've done many shows on this, but I think communication with the dead is fascinating, but the idea, whether it's using a Frank's box or another kind of device, that you can electronically communicate with the dead, this is something that you've done a lot of study on. What did you find?
You know, there's it's interesting because, you know, ghost hunters think of like EVP as like this thing, you take a machine into a haunted house and then you pick up, a creepy voice or something, but they don't realize that it can also be used almost as a way of mediumship. And I often look at my friend Martha Copeland, and she had a group of people who would attempt to use EVP to communicate with deceased loved ones. And I always found this to be one of the most fascinating topics that I researched because she would She would produce very clear recordings of her deceased daughter, and it sounded just like her voice, and she was basically trying to reach out to her from beyond the grave. And I think the kind of the interesting thing about this story is that her deceased daughter was very into EVP before she passed on. And so it didn't come as a surprise that she would begin using that as a tool to reach out. Now, besides that, there are other experiments currently underway. I know of a recording station in Brazil, as well as a new one that is being developed by a really cool scientist named R. Craig Hogan, that is attempting to create two-way communication channels with the spiritual world. And all of this stuff is, of course, like under development, but it's something that I've been following, and I'm very curious, you know, where it's going to lead to.
Now, you said something. I've heard other people say this. I think there's a good point about this. We talk about the paranormal, but yet, you know, I talk to many, many people, ordinary people on the Campfire Show, about their experiences, and the paranormal actually seems to be normal. It seems to happen to almost everybody in one form or another, whether it's something like a full body apparition that is right in your face or something maybe a little more subtle. So it seems to be far more normal. You think that terminology is important in terms of progress. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Oftentimes I'm a little bit at odds with like the media skeptics, but I heard a skeptic, I think it was Chris French, say something recently that if the paranormal were ever discovered, it would not be paranormal. It would just be normal, a part of nature. And that so long as people continue to use the word paranormal, it actually hinders progress, right? And I definitely think that's true. I think that so long as people refer to these concepts as para, then it remains relegated in this box. And it's a really hard box to get out of. So I do hope that in the future, people begin thinking of some of these topics more as a undiscovered area of science, in particular, the area of consciousness studies. And I think that is the direction that things are going. I don't feel like, for instance, a near-death experience is thought of so much as a paranormal topic anymore. Like when I think of paranormal, I think of a lot of like fringe topics. I think of like the Loch Ness Monster, or I think of, you know, maybe like alien abduction or things like that. But I think that, you know, this topic in particular is it's too important. And it's too common to be able to think of it as paranormal. This is something that a lot of people experience in some shape or another. And even the most like diehard skeptic has to look at it and say, "Look, there's something going on here." You know, it's you know, it, I mean, a skeptic may just say it's all part of some you know sociocultural phenomenon, but there's still something happening, and it's important. It's relevant to a lot of people. So that's how I feel about that.
So what do we experience? Take us through the death process and what do you think is typical? I'm sure it's different for every person, but what are some of the themes that you keep hearing over and over again?
I think, you know, the first big theme is leaving the body. And this itself is a very complex subject because, like, how do you leave the body? Like, what are you when you leave the body? And this is the thing that I've had the most difficult time wrapping my own mind around. And it wasn't until I began practicing my own out-of-body experiences that I was able to comprehend the subject a bit more easily. But that is the first thing that happens. And there's a disconnect that occurs. This happens both when you induce your own OBEs as well as when people have NDEs. You feel kind of like this energetic surge that happens as you disconnect, and you'll find that you are in what has been commonly called the ethereal body or the astral body. I think I prefer ethereal. And in many ways, it's a replica of the physical body. And I've done my own experiments in this area myself, and I've come to find that you have all the same sensations. You're not necessarily any different. However, you may find that, like if you're going out of body, like in your bedroom, that you know your axis of gravity might be off a little bit. You might have a difficult time like getting your feet on the ground, or you might be floating. A lot of times in NDEs, people are floating above the hospital bed, or they're floating in the ambulance watching their body. But this changes as like the tunnel opens up. And this is another common element, is that after you die, you're not going to be like stuck in this out-of-body state forever. People are going to come down and help you, and help take you to a new environment. And this is where the tunnel occurs. And at some point, you know, this kind of wormhole to another universe basically will appear, and you will be guided into it. And in many near-death experiences, this might be they might go through the tunnel and arrive into a new plane, as we call it, a new universe. And it may be something as simple as a garden. You know, you may just find yourself in a very beautiful, very lovely, you know, garden, or maybe a temple, or, you know, usually a very nice, pleasant environment. Or you may have a more celestial or cosmic experience and find yourself, you know, in a slightly more alien environment. But most of the time, it's very recognizable. And during many NDEs, this is the point where they may be told they have to go back. And, you know, they have unfinished business, or they may themselves say, I have to go back because I have to be with my kids or my family, and then the experience may end. But if you die, then, I mean, if you die for good, then the experience wouldn't necessarily end at that point. You get to go on with, you know, the rest of your existence in this new body, this new type of universe. And of course, there is more information from there about like what these planes are like. There's a lot of information from different seances and different physical mediumship circles that have been able to shine more light on exactly, you know, what type of lifestyle that may await each of us, you know, after we die. And so, you know, it's a rabbit hole, you know, it's a rabbit hole, Jim. You can just keep going down and down and down. And there's a lot to learn. And, you know, it's a challenge even like figuring out like what's good information, what's bad information. But it's always interesting, I'll tell you that.
You know, you talked about debating the skeptics. And let's say you ran across a skeptic that says, hey, you know, I don't believe in any of this stuff. All this stuff that people report and so forth, they're hallucinations. They're the cry of a dying brain. And when you're dead, and that's it. So enjoy your life now, and it's all over. When you flatline, that's it. What would you say to them? I mean, what can you say?
Well, firstly, I do think that it's difficult to make an argument for this just based on one piece of evidence. As an example, you can't just use out-of-body experiences and say, hey, this is the proof of an afterlife and all of these like really amazing, you know, grand concepts. You have to take everything and kind of use it as a whole. You know, there was one website, one researcher who's always been influential to me, and that's Victor Zamet. And his site is victorzamet.com, which is a lawyer presents the case for the afterlife. And so what he basically did is he compiled dozens of different areas of afterlife evidence. And then what he says is that taken as a whole, it constitutes something that's very close to proof of an afterlife. So the first thing I would say to a skeptic is, you know, look at all the evidence. Don't just cherry pick one area. You know, you take all of it collectively. And, you know, then tell me that there isn't something happening, at least. There isn't something going on here. Now, if they continue to say, look, it's all bunk, you know, this is impossible, then it's kind of a situation where that person's own prejudices and belief systems are interfering with what I see as objective, oftentimes scientific evidence. And it's very difficult to debate with that, okay? So sometimes these people who are very, very skeptical, they will have their own experiences later in life. One of the most common types of experiences that people can have is like an after-death communication. Like a loved one dies and maybe they see that loved one, or they feel their loved one like touch them, or like a synchronicity or coincidence happens. Sometimes these things will happen to those people, and later on in life, they will begin to be more open-minded. But the best I can do is just show them the evidence, say here it is, and let them make up their own mind. And that's really all you can do. I mean, you know, I mean, it's impossible to make somebody think a different way, and I would never want to do that. Now, the only issue is some of these skeptics, they can get very vocal, and sometimes they can even get quite aggressive. And, you know, when that happens, I mean, you have to deal with it maturely. But I personally don't feel like there's been any, like, very solid arguments by the skeptical camp, you know, to be able to say the afterlife as a whole is something that doesn't exist. I think that there's just too much overwhelming evidence in support of the afterlife to be able to take the guy seriously and say, oh, it's all hallucinations. That, to me, just sounds like it's somebody who's not educated trying to make a point. And, yeah, it doesn't really go anywhere.
Now, I would agree to some extent, because the thing is that what I find is there are skeptics who you can have great conversations with, and they're willing to have a give and take. I've had Dr. Michael Shermer on the programs before, and even though we agreed to disagree, I thought he was somewhat reasonable. He was a great guy for coming on the show, because a lot of, quote, skeptics wouldn't do that. But I will say, among a certain contingent, there is almost this religious zeal, and it's kind of ironic because many of these same people talk about the illogical nature of those who believe in the supernatural or in religion or the other. And then they, as it pertains to science, kind of display exactly the same kind of dogmatism and the fist pounding and the, I'm never going to believe it. It doesn't matter what you show me or what you tell me or what reports you share, whatever you say, it doesn't matter. It's kind of like almost this flat earth mentality, you can't possibly be right. Don't confuse me with the facts.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, you know, I'll mention, like, with Michael Shermer. I've actually kind of been a fan of Michael Shermer for, like, many years. Some of those people who are, like, even like media skeptics are not even as bad as the skeptics that I'm describing necessarily. Like Shermer, for instance, he engages the content, right? He seeks out, like, intelligent conversations about it. And even on a few rare occasions, he'll throw a bone to the other camp. And the same can be said about some of the other guys, even like I mentioned Chris French earlier. So I don't even mind some of those guys as much. Maybe I'm referring more to like the internet skeptic breed. A lot of people can come out like the James Randi forum culture. And, you know, these guys, right, like their whole mission is just to, you know, put people down who have interest in these topics. And they are definitely a nuisance. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, when you prescribe a certain, like, philosophy to yourself, and I think one of them is humanism, which, I agree with humanism, but, like, if you look up the definition of humanism, it automatically concludes there can be no afterlife, right? So, like, if you go by a certain belief system like that says there can be no afterlife, it's all about materialism, physicalism, and scientism, then all these subjects can't exist. So it doesn't matter what the evidence is, because it doesn't exist, it can't exist, it's ridiculous. And so this is what a lot of people unwittingly, I think, get caught up in, and then they have to just dismiss it, you know, whether it's real or not, because they have their own belief system. Even if they don't admit that it's a belief system, it still is a belief system. So, you know, it's a different thing if you objectively look at all the evidence and arrive to a certain conclusion, but it's something else if you feel you have to dismiss it because it goes against, you know, what you've been taught and, like, the subculture you belong to. If that happens, then it's no different than, like, a dogmatic religion, in my opinion.
Very interesting. Well, Cyrus, this has been fascinating, a fascinating discussion. I know there's much more, and you have the book out, Understanding Life After Death. Where can people get the book and also learn more about everything that you do and all of your research?
Sure. You know, of course, the book is available on Amazon, Kindle, and paperback. So that's Understanding Life After Death. You can just plug it in on Amazon, Cyrus Kirkpatrick. I do encourage people who want to discuss this topic and get involved to join me on my Facebook discussion group, where we are always having very interesting discussions about this. You can find that by going on Facebook and typing in Afterlife Topics, and the group should pop right up. There's also afterlifetopics.com, which is also a place you can find the book easily. And if you're interested in the things that I do personally, there is CyrusKirkpatrick.com. I do a lot of travel, like you mentioned at the introduction, and travel logs and photojournalism and things like that. And that should cover it.
Very good. Our guest has been Cyrus Kirkpatrick. The book is Understanding Life After Death, and I love this subtitle, An Exploration of What Awaits You, Me, and Everyone We've Ever Known. Cyrus, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim.
And thank you for tuning in to The Other Side, and I hope whatever awaits you and me is very good. But let's stick around a little bit until then. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.